So today is Mother's Day. If you didn't know that, I'm sorry. It's going to be a bit of a scramble after church to get something for your mom if you're going to be celebrating with your mom. But it's basically celebrating the powerful half of our human race, the women within our lives who make this world a better place. They're oftentimes the smartest people in the room, the kindest people in the room, the most intentional people in the room, and also help us to just feel connected to other people as well as to God. They lead us in ethics and empathy and truly are a blessing to our society. And I know for myself, I have learned so much from all the women within my life about compassion, about just helping me to be smarter. And so this is an encouragement for you to show appreciation to the women in your life, for your mom, for the mom of your children, for the great or the mom of your great grandchildren or grandchildren, for the women who impacted your life. And they're often underrecognized and underappreciated within our society, but they are a gift to our human race and often face obstacles that we don't even recognize. So let's just pause for a moment of prayer as we continue our service and have a special prayer for the women within our lives and in our community. Thank you, God, for this day that we can recognize, not just today, but hopefully all the time, recognize the amazing women within our lives. And Lord, help us to be able to listen and to empower them, to be led by them. And Lord, that you would just help us today to be able to show appreciation and kindness and to absorb some of the wisdom that they impart within our lives. And Lord, I recognize also that this is a day where for some people it's a day of pain, where we've lost moms or maybe didn't have a good mom or we can't be a mom. And Lord, I just pray that you would be a comfort to those who are struggling today. And Lord, that that this would be a day where they can just find comfort in you. And Lord, that when life doesn't go as we'd hoped or we'd planned, Lord, that we can lean on you in these times. And God, that you would provide a support and a comfort from others around us to help us through this day or help us through all the days. And God, I just thank you that you have blessed us with this community, Lord, where we value the voice of women. We value the presence and the leadership of women in our congregation. And we thank you that they take on roles in leadership, whether it be our pastors, our leaders in our boards, or leading Bible study, or children's ministries, or all the other ministries that we have at Grace Point and even within our own homes. Lord, we thank you for how you have created us in this way. I pray this in your name. Amen. So kids, you are dismissed to go to your time of teaching. And we bless you as you go in that time of just your learning and discipleship. Growing up in a construction family, there were times where I had the privilege of being able to destroy things. You're like, wow, that doesn't sound like a good quality to have in a pastor. But there is something about having a hammer in your hand, like a big sledgehammer in your hand, and just hitting something so hard that your job, like it paid me money to destroy things at times. Because it's demolition time, right? In any type of renovation, you've got to demolish certain things. You've got to pull things apart to be able to build things back up again. And so there were times where I just got to be able to do that. And I remember one time where it was actually in the church that I grew up in, and it was in the auditorium. And the auditorium was designed in such a way that the walls at the back of the auditorium were designed to be removed to extend the size of the auditorium. And so the job of myself and my brother and my brother-in-law, we all worked in the company, and we decided, hey, let's make this a little more dramatic, and let's take all of the drywall off of one side of the wall, and then take the studs out, and then we'll walk through the wall, like just in the movies, right? Except we had no camera, and so we did that, and so this was about a 30-foot wall, and there's three of us, so we just get 10 feet, And we carefully take out all the studs to be able to make sure that it's just the drywall just hanging there. And then we were going to run through it, and we smashed through it. And it was a lot of fun. And it took down the whole wall, and it made a big mess. And the thing about construction and destruction is that you make the mess, you got to clean up the mess. That's the downside of it. But there's actually a whole movement, and there is a company in Edmonton, and they have what's called a rage room. Have you heard of this? A rage room where you go into this room and you pay a bunch of money and you take a bunch of items, like it could be an old computer screen or something like that, and you take a sledgehammer and you just destroy it with the sledgehammer. And it's actually a very therapeutic process for people to be able to do it, a way to get out your stress. There might be healthier ways to do it. And it's basically they've developed these rage rooms so you don't do it at home, which is a good thing, right? Like, it's in a controlled environment. You've got the safety equipment on and everything. And it's not that it's completely risk-free, but probably the best part about it is you can do that stuff and somebody else cleans it up because that's what you're paying for. Well, today we're going to be reading about how Jesus went from this wonderful encounter of turning water into wine, and keeping the party going. And we read about this beautiful interaction he had with his mom, where it was this wonderful relationship where she's like, just do it. And then he does what his mom says. He's a good boy. And then we get into the next little bit of John chapter 2, and it just takes this weird turn where Jesus turns over tables in the temple and makes a ruckus and makes a big mess within the temple. And so we go from this beautiful wedding celebration scene to Jesus being in the temple and getting in trouble, essentially. So let's read it. John chapter 2, beginning of verse 12. After this, he went down to Capernaum with his mother and brothers and his disciples. There they stayed for a few days. So he's hanging out with his family. It's a good family reunion after the wedding. Sounds pretty normal, doesn't it? And then in verse 13, when it was almost time for the Jewish Passover, Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple courts, he found people selling cattle, sheep and doves, and others sitting at tables exchanging money. So he made a whip out of cords and drove all from the temple courts, both sheep and cattle. He scattered the coins of money changers and overturned tables. To get those who sold doves, he said, "Get these out of here. Stop turning my father's house into a market." His disciples remembered that this is written, "Zeal for your house will consume me." So Jesus turned water into wine, and then he clears the temple courts. And John starts with this clearing. And here's a little bit of background. So John starts his book with Jesus clearing the temple. Now, Matthew, Mark, and Luke also have Jesus clearing the temple, but it's like at the end of his ministry. But this is before a lot of his ministry even starts, is where John has it. And so it's kind of confusing. So, in fact, Matthew, Mark, and Luke don't even have Jesus in Jerusalem until the end of his ministry. And yet John has Jesus in Jerusalem a few different times. So did the temple clearing happen twice? Or was John confused as to when it happened? Or because normally what we celebrate is, you know, we have like, what is that thing called? Palm Sunday. We have Palm Sunday where Jesus enters Jerusalem, then he clears the temple courts, right? And then he goes into trial, and the high priest is pretty convinced that what he's going to do. The thing is, the high priest came to a fairly quick conclusion at the end of Jesus' ministry, and the end of his life for that matter, where he seemed to know well of Jesus and had a well-calculated plan to get rid of Jesus. It wasn't just something that he made up spontaneously to be able to get everyone against Jesus so quickly, right? And so it might have happened twice, but certainly we can't say that John was confused that this was the beginning of his ministry of Jesus turning over the tables and creating a whip and driving out all of the animals and essentially yelling at people. But Jesus acted in rage, and Jesus made many enemies with people who used the name of God to oppress people with power, not because of the position, but because of their posture towards God and towards others. See, it wasn't wrong to be in a position of power in that time, but how they used that power to oppress other people was what Jesus had issue with. and he made many enemies quickly. And this was one of the ways that he made an enemy in the temple courts, because it was the high priest who would have allowed it. It was all the officials that would have allowed the merchants to be in the temple courts and selling all of these things and taking away what the temple was for, which is to worship God. Jesus acted in his rage because he recognized the temple as sacred space. Space that is reserved for moments where we encounter God. Have you ever thought about that? Like, we have sacred space within our lives, don't we? We have these places or these moments within our lives where like, nah, that feels like a sacred moment that I've encountered God, where it's kind of set apart. It's a place of refuge. It might be a place of study where we've just learned so much about God. It might be a place of just focus, hyper-focused on what God is speaking to us. It might be a sacred space of prayer or just an encounter with God or with Jesus. It might be a sacred place where we just feel peace or we feel more centered around Jesus in our lives, where we're drawn deep into reflection or where we've had like a huge epiphany in our lives. Or it might be a place where we're just drawn into reflection and nostalgia of what God has done in our lives. But sacred space is a moment or a location where the line between heaven and earth feels a little more thin. Those thin line moments where something special happened. And it wasn't just a feeling, but it was an experience. It was an encounter with the divine, where the line between heaven and earth seems just a little more sin. But in sacred spaces, sometimes we get caught up in certain things. Like when it comes to like church culture, something we struggle with is essentially when we enter into a church building, sometimes we're very consumeristic. We're very consumeristic. We're instead of being in a place of worship and a place of prayer, we're kind of assessing what's going on. And Jesus would have been appalled at how the temple, a place to encounter God, would have become a place to sell stuff. It's like, hey, guys, you're missing the point. You've got mission drift here. Your vision is off as to what this building is for, right? And so Jesus was looking at what was happening around him, and he was just appalled because this was his house. This was his house. Jesus was God. The temple was God's house, and he had passionate zeal. Jesus would have seen this as his Father's house and his own house, and God is right behind that heavy curtain. So in the temple, you have the outer courts, which is where they were selling all the stuff, and then you have, like, you go inside the temple, and there's a few stages. There's, like, the lobby and those sorts of things, and there's a place where only one of the priests could go into, and that is where the presence of God, and they go behind this curtain. And it was such a sacred place that here's what they would do, is you would only go in certain times of year when it was right. And then they would actually, getting into the presence of God, if you had your timing off or if you weren't the right person to go in, they actually would tie a rope around their ankle. And just in case, being in the presence of God would strike them down so that they could recover the body. Isn't that incredible? So that is a sacred, powerful place. And so Jesus is looking at this outer court of how they should be preparing themselves for worship and for sacrifice and forgiveness of sins and atonement. And it should be a place that is one step away from reconciling with God and worshiping God. And yet here they are making money, inviting in all of the consumerism that there is within their society. And it affected Jesus very deeply, so much that he had an overwhelming rage. See, Jesus is seeing the gradual slope of decline in the temple and sees the need for a reset. You know how sometimes I had to do it to my iPad this morning because it just wouldn't open. Sometimes you just need to reset it, right? You got to turn it off, turn it back on. And Jesus was looking at the operating system of his temple and he was thinking, this thing needs a reset. It needs a reset. We gotta do some demolition here. We gotta make a renovation to be able to bring people back to where they need to be. And he had an overwhelming rage and strength. But not only that, it wasn't just destroying things that people shouldn't have had there, but it was also a cleansing. And in some versions, you'll see how Jesus cleansed the temple, where it was a refresh, and the courts that had to make a way for worship and for prayer. And Jesus was saying, you got to clean this up, because this is not a place where animals should be making a mess. This is not a place where thieves and robbers should be in. This is not a place where people should just be making money as opposed to preparing people for worship. So that is that sacred space. And then there's also sacred moments, because this was also a sacred moment. And it sounds like such a violent, rageful moment, but it was also a sacred moment because Jesus was the only one who had the right to be able to do this. It was his house. It wasn't the high priest's house. It was Jesus' house. But nobody recognized that. But we recognize that because we know who Jesus was. And it was a sacred moment where he had this rage within him to say, okay, we gotta clean this up. We got to tear some of this stuff out and throw it away. And sometimes in our own lives, we have to recognize the sacred moments that exist, those gifts from God towards us. And sometimes we need to take some time to commemorate them in some way, or to write them down in a journal, or to revisit the space time and time again, or the place. And it's not that we're trying to recreate it, but we recognize that, hey, this was where that thin line was between heaven and earth for me, where I encountered Jesus. I'm going to come back here. I'm going to be in this space, not to recreate it, but to remember it. And the thing is, it's not that we try to have these encounters all of the time, because then we don't really live life, right? But sometimes those very dramatic, thin line encounters are somewhat rare, and sometimes they happen more often in our lives, sometimes less often in our lives. But we don't put too much value on the space or the place, but God, because God is everywhere, and it's not about the place or the space, but it's about the actual encounter. And it's important for us to remember those encounters that we've had with God. Well, let's look on in verse 18. The Jews then responded to him, "What sign can you show us to prove your authority to do all this?" Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple, and I will raise it again in 3 days." Now, I'm sure Jesus knew that they weren't going to understand what he meant, right? Nobody did. Not even the disciples understood what he meant at that point. But we know now, right? It's about the resurrection. Jesus is talking about himself as the temple. It's no longer a building. It's a person. It's God. Direct worship to God. Destroy this temple. Take my life. I will raise up in 3 days. They replied, "It has taken 46 years to build this temple, and you are going to raise it in 3 days." But the temple he had spoken of was his own body. After he was raised from the dead, his disciples recalled what he had said. Then they believed the scripture and the words that Jesus had spoken. So Jesus is talking about a new temple. So not just a renovated, not just a clean temple, but an absolutely new temple. So he's of course referring to his death and his resurrection, and he was going to change everything and make the temple unnecessary for worship, for forgiveness, and even unnecessary for experiencing the presence of God, because God is now accessible and everywhere to everyone. And there was an ask for proof of authority, and Jesus had the authority to turn the tables. He had it. It was his house. And imagine the disciples watching this happen. Can you imagine this? That they're with him and they're watching this unfold. Can you be like, okay, there are leadership moves that help you excel in society. Jesus, this is not one of them. Like, what are you doing? You're kind of destroying any momentum that you've built. You just turn water into wine. Nobody's done that. Like, we think you're really cool. Like, you gotta spread this word a little bit more. You can rule this thing. And yet, here's what he does. He turns over the tables, and you can just think, this guy is not going to do what I thought he would do. He's making all the wrong moves, and he's in trouble. He is trouble, and he is in trouble. And that's the thing, too, is how does Jesus not get in more trouble, right? Like, it just kind of moved from story to story to story. And it's not the turning of the tables that gets Jesus in the most trouble, right? This is just something that happens. And maybe it happened more than once. And maybe he's not the only one who did it. I don't know. But it's something where Jesus had authority
that he did not have to prove because he knew who he was. Because Jesus was here to reset salvation. He was here to change everything because of the identity he had, because of the authority he had. He dismantled a religious system that was absolutely out of control. They put rules on rules on rules and then addendums to those rules and then added more rules, all to control people. And so he dismantled that with his existence. He made forgiveness accessible to everyone. Everyone. You're like, well, not that guy. Yeah, that guy. Not her. Yeah, absolutely her. Accessible to everyone. That's hilarious. I know. I love it. Kids make the cutest sounds. Jesus disrupted the balance of power into the hands of the outcast. That's to say, he wasn't there to appease the leaders of that time. He wasn't there to gain worldly power. He was there to dismantle it and to empower those who were being taken advantage of, to empower those who had nothing, to empower those who had no power in society. That's what he does. That's what he did. I love hearing the stories of people who and how they met Jesus, how they encountered Jesus. And a couple weeks ago, we had our baptisms. We had just these short video clips of their testimony and how they encountered Jesus. And the privilege that I get, as well as the other pastors get when we lead our baptism classes leading up to those times, is we get to hear a fuller version of their story, which is also just a snippet of their story. They get like 5 minutes in our sessions to be able to share their story. What I love about it is that there are so many powerful things, because even with those little clips that you saw, they were amazing, they were powerful, they were wonderful, they were encouraging, we celebrated with them. And it's just a snippet of what God has done in their life. And as you hear the impact of their struggles, of why and how they met Jesus, it's absolutely incredible. And I'm never disappointed when I hear a story of how someone encountered Jesus. And the thing is, a lot of times what happens is we have to focus on that first step. Now, there's a program that existed for I don't know how long, at least a century, something like that, which is called Alcoholics Anonymous. You've probably heard about the 12-step programs. It's very common and very popular, and it's very effective in helping people with addictions. And do you know why it's so effective? Because it has a strong first step. Do you know what the first step is? I'm powerless. I am powerless. And here's the thing. When we encounter Jesus for the first time or the third time or the fourth time, how powerless do we feel? And sometimes the more powerless we feel, the more impactful it is when we find Jesus. Did you know that? And I think it's important for me to ask, or for us to ask every once in a while, how strong is my first step? How powerless do I feel as I rely on God, as I rely on Jesus? And it doesn't mean that you're not functioning in life. It doesn't mean that you're not a good person. It doesn't mean that you don't have it all together. But to recognize that I need God because I can't do this on my own. Friends, that is a powerful first step. So Jesus redefined that for us. He helped us to understand that we needed salvation and he was going to offer it. But as we redefine worship, sometimes we enter into this space and it feels very ritualistic, right? And we have our outline of our service and all those sorts of things. And that's basically so that we don't have to worry about what we're supposed to do next sometimes. But we just, you know, we're like, okay, it's going to have this and this and this. And I kind of know what's going on and you know, how many songs we'll sing. And I might know the song. I might not know the song. But it's not about that ritual. It's about entering into that relationship and recognize the relationship that we have with God. And we're not here to show each other how good we can worship. We're here to have that action of worship towards God, to enhance that relationship with God. And so it's not about performance. It's about authenticity. It's about being authentic towards each other, being authentic towards God. It goes from just acting to absolute sincerity, to being sincere in our expression of worship towards God. It's not about the rules of conduct, but it's about the righteousness that we have because of Jesus. It's not about shame, but it's It brings us to a sense of belonging that as we gather together, we share a faith in Jesus. And we're here because we want to worship Him. We want to be together to be able to do that. It takes us from feeling the guilt of all the things that happen throughout the week. And we experience the forgiveness and the reminder that Jesus forgives us. It takes us from fear to confidence, from weakness to power, from rejection to inclusion. And that is the hope of worship that Jesus brings within our lives, because that's who He is. And of course, we know the end of the story and how this all turns out, that it is resurrection power that sealed everything. It sealed everything for us, that Jesus rose from the dead. And the significance of Jesus turns the table when it comes to His resurrection is so significant that we need to recognize it and come back to it time and time again to remember, okay, with this story, it's a little weird, but a little cryptic, but Jesus did all of that, what He prophesied, what He said He would do. And imagine being around Jesus, even for James and John and Peter and all the other guys and asking them, okay, Jesus, okay, just give us some tangible answers to be able to say, okay, are you God? And a lot of times Jesus would be like, well, what do you see? Right? It's like, and He had this mystery around Him, right? So anytime anybody asked Him, okay, so who are you? Well, who do you think I am? Right? Okay, well, are you God's Messiah? Well, what do you see? Okay, but are you really? Okay, what do you think? Right? And Jesus left this ministry. It wasn't this mystery. And it wasn't because He was cruel or He was sneaky or He was manipulative. But He wanted their belief to come from them. He was trying to empower them in their belief. Because if He said, yeah guys, no, don't do that. If he came in with the rules and the direct answers, He'd be like, no, just forget everything. Just follow Me. Right? And Jesus, it was invitational. It wasn't demanding. Right? And that's the mystery of Jesus and the beauty of Jesus and how, and that's that kind of the rabbinical sort of culture where they ask a lot of questions and they bring a lot of challenge and stimulate thought. And Jesus wanted to do that with His disciples. And that's the way of that He would have taught as a rabbi. And it was invitational to help the disciples that when things got shaky, they were like, okay, wait a minute. When He asked that question, what was My answer? You're God's Messiah. You're the Son of God. You're the Savior of the world. You are the Messiah. Oh, yeah. Those are My words that I spoke about Him. And that's what I saw. And what did I see? And it was less about the answers that He gave, but more about what they saw Him do and how they experienced Him and how they related to Him. And imagine for them when Jesus was no longer walking with them physically, that they were like, man, I just miss how I felt around Him. Everything felt like a sacred moment, sacred space. Even when I doubted, it felt so sacred and I couldn't not be around Him. Friends, that's the power of Jesus within our lives. So verse 23, now while He was in Jerusalem at the Passover festival, many people saw the signs He was performing and believed in His name. But Jesus would not entrust Himself to them, for He knew all people. He did not need any testimony about mankind, for He knew what was in each person. Now, that's a pretty convicting statement, isn't it? That we're in this character check of our faith in Jesus. Jesus knew that people were following Him and complimenting Him and now would possibly be the ones, possibly later on in His ministry, at the end of His ministry, yelling to crucify Him. They liked the signs and the potential of power, but they didn't necessarily like the person of Jesus. They're like, hey, you can do some cool stuff. Yeah, do that. Yeah, that's really neat. I like that. I think I like this Jesus guy. I think I believe in Him for what He can do. And sometimes when we approach Jesus, even today, we approach Jesus for what we can get, don't we? And it's not all the time, but sometimes we approach Jesus, we approach God for what we can get. I need more power. I need more peace. I need more forgiveness. I need influence and opportunity. I need more rest, more belonging. I need more success within my life. And that's the thing about approaching Jesus. When we approach Jesus with what we can get, sometimes we just need stuff from Jesus. Because, you know, if we have that good step one where we feel powerless, we need Jesus. But if it's all about what we can get, it's incomplete. And we'll get to that in a little bit. Because sometimes we're really focused on the entertainment of Christianity, like entertainment. Well, there's way better entertainment than than what we offer, right? If I'm looking for just entertainment, but think about it for a second, to consume what is presented and provided. We sometimes want to be entertained and amused by all of this that happens. And yeah, we come to the door because we believe in Jesus, but it's like, yeah, but it better go the way I think it should go, right? The sound quality should be good. Everybody should remember what they're supposed to be doing. There shouldn't be a lot of lulls in the sermon. There should be some good stories that keep me entertained. But the fact of the matter is, if we approach church, if we approach our relationship with God as purely entertainment or amusement or preference, it's never going to be enough. The teaching will never be enough. The music will never be enough. The lights, the sound, the seats, well, they're pretty comfortable, but they're not exactly Lazy Boy. The coffee might not be what I like, or the snacks might not be my favorite snacks, or the friendliness of people sometimes is a little bit different than it is some Sundays. And here's the thing about friendliness. I just want to coach you a little bit because I actually experienced this in a tangible way yesterday. Yesterday I went to Princess Auto on my motorbike. Probably not my best decision because I get a little carried away at Princess Auto. And so I found this really good deal on a hose reel, which is not going to fit on my motorbike. And so I'm calling Kim in the checkout line. I'm like, hey, Kim, what are you doing? Can you come scoop something up for me? Because I can't fit it on my bike. He's like, oh, wow, okay. She was gracious. She was kind. And so I'm in the checkout line, and it had no box. It had no barcode, but I took a picture of the barcode. And the cashier was a little frustrated with me. She said, you should have gone to the person in the section. I couldn't find anybody in the section. And it was really busy. There was a big lineup. And I did feel bad. Like I was like, okay, I'm holding up the line. And so they called in more cashiers. And I'm like, I'm creating a ruckus here. And then I got an even better deal on it because it had no box. And I'm like, woohoo, score. And I was in a good mood now, even though I don't know how I'm going to get it home. And I just said to the cashier, who probably was having a very stressful, hard day, and I just made it harder for her, I said, here's the thing. I said, if anybody gives you a hard time for this taking too long, I said, just blame me. It's okay. You can totally blame, like, just throw me under the bus. And sure enough, she smiled. And it changed the mood, and we entered in this conversation. It was just this great encounter. Because here's the thing. If we want people to be friendly to us, maybe we can start, right? Smiles are contagious. I mean, not creepy smiles, but smiles in general are fairly contagious, right? Practice your smile if you need to, right? Like, not too much teeth, right? Just enough, just right. Try to be natural, right? Try to actually feel happy before you show it, because otherwise it just looks like a performance, right? But the thing is, friendliness within church can be contagious. And I've heard lots of comments about, hey, I like Grace Point because it's a friendly church. And I hope that we can keep that up in that momentum, right? And sometimes we don't feel as friendly as other times. But you know what? Even if we just have a gesture, it's like, you know what? I don't feel friendly. I don't feel very social right now. But I'm just going to try to be friendly to the people that I encounter. And you know what? Rarely do you regret it. Rarely. I mean, I can't think of a time where I've regretted being more friendly than I wanted to be or than what I felt, right? Usually it ends up going better. And so that's a challenge to us, is that the friendliness that we can, that's something that in our hearts, like, there's no way we can institute that. Like, if we institute it, it's like disingenuous, right? Friendliness is just a part of us, of who we are, and can develop some coaching in that. So anyway, smiles get smiles. That's what I had in my notes here. Smiles get smiles. But then all of these things that we critique our church and we critique the entertainment aspect of our church are based on our own preferences, isn't it? It's based on our preferences. I have preferences. You have preferences. We like different types of music. We like different types of teaching. We like different types of focuses. And if we set those preferences aside, but enter into why we're actually here, which is not about our preferences, but to encounter God, to worship God, to be challenged, to be encouraged, to learn. And I think that if we were to approach as we come in to gather in worship, and that's only one of the events that we have within our church, but there's other events within your life that happen. And as you encounter and as you enter into those spaces, I would encourage you to say a prayer. God, help me to encounter you. I'm open to whatever you have for me today. And allow God to lead you in that. So that's less about what I can get, but more about what I can give. Another thing that we want to get from God is just a security. I need a safety net. I need to cover my bases. And I want to make sure that in this next life that I've got somewhere cool to go, right? As opposed to somewhere hot. But the thing is, fear is a good start. If fear is how you came to Jesus, that's an okay start. But it's not a foundation, right? If you came into your relationship with God out of fear, that's okay. But it's not a foundation for your faith. So develop your faith as you journey with God. And sometimes we come to God and we want to get stuff. And it might be, God will provide for my needs if I give him more attention. God will help me succeed. And those things can happen at times, not a guarantee. But at the same time, to approach God, not with what I can get, but what I can give. What I can give. What I can give to God. What I can give to my family, what I can give to others, what I can give to my community, to recognize that my life is to glorify God, to glorify God, that myself is to be in relationship with God. My identity is to be in relationship with God, and that any of the stuff that I get is given by God, and to give him, go back to number one, give him the glory. And to steward it as if it's his, not our own. So just in a time of reflection as we close today, the first one is, what are the sacred spaces and moments in my life? Do you recognize those? Can you think of any moments or spaces that you encountered God? It might be just that strong first step that you took in your faith or any other times that happened after that. Secondly, how can I better recognize sacred space and moments in my life? Where the line between heaven and earth seemed thin, write it down. Look around you and memorize it. Take a picture. Record a video. Something to be able to commemorate that and recognize that, to be able to come back to it. Because those moments don't happen all the time. Thirdly, when I recognize the godly nature of Jesus, what images come to mind? When you think of the godly nature of Jesus, what images come to mind? Is it power? Is it forcefulness like in the temple? Is it gentleness? Is it the healer? Is it the kindness that you would imagine he has in his eyes? What images come to mind? Fourthly, what are the areas in my life that don't match my faith? See, we need to live a congruent life, don't we? Where my public life and my private life are kind of the same, right? What does God see when no one else is around? Do my words and my actions align with my belief in Jesus? Am I the same person on Sunday as I am on Monday? Number five, what do I need to develop my character? Because the thing is, none of us are really consistent with that, are we? And it's okay, but we want to develop in that more and more, don't we? To live that congruent, that consistent life between faith and reality, where our words and our beliefs align with our actions and our words that we speak. So what do we need to develop that character within us? And then finally, I've asked this in many of our sermons before, who can help me? This is hard to do on our own. But invite someone to help you to develop your character in Christ. Will you pray with me? God, we thank you that this action, which seems so counterintuitive to leading a movement that Jesus was leading, and yet there's so much underneath it, that he wasn't here to just lead a movement, but he actually was you. And Lord, in that space where there was a system, where there was a way for people to access you, what Jesus did was he tore down the barriers between the people and you. And God, we also reflect on the fact that when you died on the cross, that thick curtain that had your presence in it on earth was torn from top to bottom. So that means, God, that you tore that curtain so that we could have access to you. Jesus did that. And so, God, as we approach you, as we come to you, we come to you as people who have no power to be able to live the life that we want to live, to follow you the way we want to follow you, to be saved the way only you can save us. And so, God, I pray that right now, as we contemplate this whole scenario, as we contemplate Jesus, who he is and who he represented and what he did, Lord, we surrender to you. And we ask you, Lord, bring an encounter of you within our lives. Lord, help us to experience that moment of that thin line between heaven and earth. To sense your presence, your strength, your power when we have none. To sense your forgiveness when we are weighed down by guilt. To sense your freedom when we feel imprisoned and burdened. We thank you for Jesus, for his passion, for his zeal, for his willingness, for his love, for his forgiveness, for his sacrifice.